You're listening to The Dice Men Cometh, proudly sponsored by Area 52, Tasmania's largest independent pop culture retailer. Find them at 104 Elizabeth Street, Hobart, or online at area52.com.au.
The Dice Men Cometh!
Look, I'm not even going to wait for the ukulele to cut out today,
because,
guys...
Yep.
I have got so much news to talk about tonight.
Yes.
I might just have to take up the whole show.
What's all the news about?
Well, the news is about board games, card games, role-playing games, plus some other geek culture stuff, because that's what we do here on The Dice Men Cometh, which is Edge Radio's own geek culture board game radio show / podcast / internet meme.
What? We're an internet meme?
Always.
Yep. Wow, happy cat me.
And we're here for episode 208 on the 12th of April 2018. I am Mark.
I'm Garth.
I am Leon.
And tonight...
He's old man Leon.
I am.
That's right. He's had his 30th birthday.
Yes. And then I've been at home with a bad back ever since.
Welcome to the 31st.
I've transitioned properly.
Oh, you are such an old man.
So apart from whinging and moaning, what have we got on this week?
We, as in you, Garth, are going to talk about an exciting new game. Massive big box Kickstarter thingy that we played the last couple of weeks.
And your favourite style of game, which we'll get to in a moment.
Yeah, I'm going to talk about all the news we've got this week, and there's... Pages.
I don't think we have time now after that extra long.
And then Leon, if we've got time at the end,
big if,
you're going to regale us with the stories of your birthday party.
I will indeed gale you all.
And one of the games we played there, which none of us, I don't think, had ever played before.
Mm-hmm.
But let's leave it just in case we don't get to it. So we'll be back to talk about what we've been playing lately very soon. And thanks so much to Area 52 for sponsoring us again this week. They are so awesome.
They are awesome. Almost as awesome as us.
That was Happily Ever After by Armin Soy. It's because I'm a vegetarian, you maybe read that one out, isn't it?
Damn right it is.
On Edge Radio 99.3 FM with the Dice Men, cometh proudly brought to you by our good friends at Area 52.
You can call him Milky Milk, Armin Soy.
You could.
You could, but we're not gonna, because I was in the middle of talking about our good friends at Area 52. Go in there and buy their stuff. They have comical books. I like comical books.
You do. They are also graphical novellas.
Yes, indeed.
I've got some... graphical novella news, you'd be surprised to know, Leon.
Ooh, that's
I've even got some crossover between a graphic novel and a board game, and I've got crossover between a graphic novel and a role-playing game. But I won't spoil any more. Garth.
Hello.
What have we been playing lately?
Well, thanks to Leon's birthday celebrations, we've been playing a lot.
Yeah.
But we're not going to talk about all of those things because the show only goes for an hour condensed down to 40-something minutes that is expertly edited by Leon.
Damn right.
So we're going to talk about one thing that we've been playing lately, which is one of the biggest boxes I have recently received... apart from Gloomhaven.
I was going to say, it gives Gloomhaven a run for its money in box size.
And apart from the Rising Sun. Leon, your Rising Sun arrived yet?
No.
Here, Rising Sun's about 7 kilos.
And what's the estimate of my Rising Sun? Dunno.
2020. So Gloomhaven was about 10 kilos.
Yep.
Rising Sun is about 7 kilos with all the Kickstarter expansions and the demos and all of those. And then there's this game, which comes in a pretty big box that was expertly packed by the fine distribution people at Aetherworks.
Yes.
We are talking about AEG's latest re-foray into a well-known fantasy universe that is Thunderstone.
Yes.
And currently Thunderstone Quest. Ooh. Mark's favourite style of game, which are what?
Deck builder.
Deck builders.
Ah.
We will cock that up.
I see what you did there.
It's funny, Mark will say it's not quite deck builder, but pretty close. So Thunderstone, look, it originally came out in 2009.
Yes.
Now, I don't think we've featured 2009 in one of our retrospectives. Should we do one on 2009? Mark will talk about Thunderstone, doubt, because it was always his deck builder of choice.
It was.
He'd always throw Dominion in the bin and go and fight some dwarves and elves and monsters and all of those things. Yep. So this is a fantasy deck building game. For anyone who knows deck building, there's a couple of key currencies. You've usually got gold or some money that you can spend to buy more cards. You've also got various forms of fight in which you then kill bad guys. And generally, the reward for killing bad guys is either more cards or XP or leveling up or getting closer to winning.
Yeah.
And this game is no different in that regard. Anyone who wants to listen to a really in-depth detail about what deck builders are, go somewhere else. Because we're talking about Thunderstone Quest. And if you know deck builders, you've pretty much learned how to play this.
Yeah.
The thing that separates this from a lot of deck builders is its size. And not just the box that it comes in, but also the amount of table space that this game takes up.
Yeah.
Because usually with deck builders, they're not always table hogs because you don't have your own player board. You've got your own little deck of cards that you're just siphoning through. Yeah. You've got a hand of cards. You've got a pile that you're drawing them from, and you've got a discard pile, and that's it. But no, not here in
Thunderstone
Alley.
Thunderstone Quest.
Oh, I want a Thunderstone.
Because not only is there a massive board that fits on the table, which, yes, is double-sided.
Just.
And that is the village. Not only that, it then comes with a wilderness tile, which is massive. It then comes with masses of dungeon tiles, mm-hmm. which you will then use and put out on the board, and they'll take up some more space. But then you've each got your individual player boards, which you put, not surprisingly, in front of every individual player, where you'll be able to put your draw pile, your discard pile, all the things you gain, track your health. But geez, it's a table hog, isn't it?
It sure is.
But it's a pretty one, though.
It is very, very pretty. So look, I do need to say a big thank you to, first of all, Mike Elliott for making this game.
Yes.
He is very well known for doing Dice Masters and being involved in Quarriors and doing, you know, the odd magic card here and there. Mark, he is also the designer of Lost Legends, that drafting game that you had, and could you ever sell?
No, I still got it.
Still got it. If anyone wants Lost Legends.
Yeah, basically Seven Wonders goes to D&Dville, yeah.
Yeah, so thanks, Mike. It also has a great series of artists working for it, so it's one of those games where they've got a million different people to do the art, but it all looks pretty coherent from my limited number of players. I only played it two or three times. So, Mark, can you tell us what this Thunderstone universe is? Because I have only ever played Thunderstone Quest. Do you remember what the hell Thunderstone is?
Well, it was always about the fact that there are these mythical elements, mythical artifacts.
Are they called Thunderstones?
You got it.
Hey!
And you had to, or in the original game, you had to go into a dungeony place with monster-like creatures, and somewhere towards the bottom of the dungeony deck. So there was no board in the very first Thunderstone. There were just piles of cards a la Dominion. And then there was a dungeon pile. You would have three monsters at the time you could fight, which represented three levels of the dungeon, where you needed light to go down to the deeper levels. If you didn't have the appropriate light, you had to pack extra attack to make up for it. It was like two extra attack points for every 1 point of light.
Sure. So there's the rough guide to Thunderstone.
And what I was going to say is the Thunderstone was just a card that was buried in the last
couple,
5 or 10 cards, that was worth a few extra victory points. That was all it was at the start.
Sure. So the way this has evolved is in a couple of ways. Because the good thing about Thunderstone is, unlike a lot of deck builders, you're always going to have quite a bit of choice on your turn. The two big decisions you're going to have to make are, first of all, am I going to go to the village, which is this massive board in the middle of the table, or am I going to go dungeoneering and go and kill monsters? And we'll do the not the boring side first, but the deck creation, the deck manipulation, and yes, the deck thinning mechanics, which are all going to be found at the village.
Yeah.
Now, what this also adds is minis. Not many of them, but the Kickstarter version that I had comes with 6 different miniatures, and they're going to signify where your hero is in the village and also where that hero is in the dungeon, which is going to be important because light is very much still an issue when it comes to Thunderstone. Yeah. So in the village, you can move your character and you can always heal a wound, which is really, really cool because you're number of wounds affects how many cards you're going to draw, so what your hand limit is going to be. Now, in a couple of the introductory or the first sessions, you're just going to be taking wound tokens from the monsters. But as you get further and further on in this game, you're going to start taking... What are they, Leon? Festering wounds.
That's right. Yeah, they were not good.
So festering wounds are just awful cards that clog up your deck, that serve no purpose.
Yeah.
And they're the cards that no deck builder ever wants to have in their deck building deck for deck building.
Yes.
It's just trash.
And it also must be said that the wound tokens in this game, the little red blood splash, all they're good.
They are good. And they fit perfectly on the player board.
Yeah.
Because the player board has a wound track and it has all of them perfectly sized. So you can go there. You can always heal up. You can always buy a card from the village because there's always going to be at least 8 different cards of various weapons or items or spells that you can buy. You can always then decide to level up one of your heroes, which we'll get to in a moment. You can always do that if you go there. But then when you decide, I'm going to go to the village, you've got to choose whereabouts you specifically want to put your hero and you'll get a bonus for that. You might want to go to the bazaar.
How bizarre.
Thank you. Where you can buy one gear token of which will offer you benefits. So you can buy some food or some iron rations, as they're called in the game.
Yeah, bread.
It looks exactly like
bread meeple.
The meeple, bread. But it's iron rations. They're going to basically be used to substitute a gold coin if you're just one gold short. Or they're going to substitute a bit of extra skill for your heroes when you're in fighting. So they're going to be important. Or you can buy a lantern, which is going to give you a bit of light so you can delve deeper into a dungeon. Or you can just buy a good old potion, which is going to allow you to heal a wound, which is really cool. You also could choose to go to the shop of Arcane Wonders, which sounds amazing, and it is. But you've got to be able to have 10 gold in your hand to be able to afford to go there. And that isn't going to happen for a while.
No.
It might have happened maybe twice or three times in the games that we have been playing. So it's not something that happens all the time.
Although I did get a good sort of gold engine going with my rogues.
You did, yes.
That let me go there quite a few times.
And it was really good. It is always good stuff.
Mm.
There's no nasty so far. Surprises in that treasure deck. It is always going to be good. You could always go to the temple and get a bit of spiritualization going on, which will allow you to heal 2 wounds instead of 1. Super duper important. It does have negative side effects in that you can't send your hero across to do a dungeon action, which some of the cards would allow you to do. But far and away the most important thing it does is it allows you to put 1 or more of the cards from your hand back on the top of your deck, so you know what you're going to be drawing at the start of your next turn, which is great if you're preparing a fight and you've got a couple of big fighty cards that you just can't quite get to work in your hand now. Stick it on the top of your deck and you'll be fine for next turn. So they're sort of the main locations in the village.
And a super quick retrospective, Garth. So in the original Thunderstone, you basically had 2 choices, village or dungeon. And the village was just buying cards, and the dungeon was fighting. That's all you had. In Thunderstone Advance, the second iteration, that they introduced a board then. I think there was a... Then they introduced the rest action, which was where you could put any cards from your hand back on your deck and basically skip your turn. You could always level up, but there was no wounds. You had curses instead of wounds, which were just a deck clogger again.
Similar to the festering wounds, I guess.
And likewise...
Why'd you point at me when you said that?
Because you had so many in your deck.
You had no skill in the original Thunderstone, but you had strength. And it sort of represented you had to be strong enough to use the certain weapon. And as we saw in the one the other day, there was like a big hammer where you needed, I think, like 8 skill, which was sort of representative of strength. You had to be strong enough to lift this massive big hammer.
Yes.
So that's a minor glitch. And then you didn't have the amazing treasure cards, which I think is a brilliant addition to the game.
It is great. And the thing about Thunderstone Quest is that it's designed to be played almost in a campaign.
Mm-hmm.
So the Kickstarter version that I've got, it comes with all the basic cards. So you can just set it up and have a go. But then it also comes with 5 quests setups. So I haven't sort of unpacked a lot of the cards in this because
spoiler
we've just
alert.
Gone a couple of the way into this.
Yeah.
So there are cards there that I've not even seen yet. And it also has a campaign book so that you can just play scenario 1, 2, 3 of each campaign going from there. It's got a bit of a story that you read at the start, so I guess it's trying to be thematic, and it's got suggested setups for the heroes that you use, which are just your typical tropes. Your heroes are going to be your rogues and your clerics and your wizards and your fighters and a couple of other ones, but they're sort of your main style. And they'll all be proficient in certain weapons, which is why you want to go and buy the right type of card, because there might be cards that are better if you're an elf or a dwarf or a rogue or a this or a that.
Yeah.
And you'll figure that out the more you play, but it's also relatively clear on the cards, because all the cards kind of tell you who it's better to have that weapon equipped with, or where that item's going to be beneficial.
If there's an advantage, yeah.
So anyway, the other decision you can make instead of going to the village is to go to the dungeon, and that is where you will be fighting big bads, which are laid out in 3 depths of the dungeon, I guess.
Welcome to the dungeon.
I was waiting for that. Thank you.
Games.
And I was going to put so much money on that being Mark and not you, so there you go, Leon. I'm pretty sure you would never say that in your life.
No.
So look, you can go to the wilderness, and the wilderness is just this permanent spot where you can always go to.
Yeah.
And you're just going to kill some bog-standard little easy monster, which isn't really going to get you much benefit in terms of growing your XP pool, and you do need XP to upgrade characters.
Because XP is also victory points.
Correct. But it's a great way, and look, just talking about the first scenario in the first session in the campaign book, you're basically killing a giant rat. And what it allows you to do is to upgrade one of your basic adventurers.
Yes.
Because your starting hand of 12 cards will contain 6 basic adventurers. It'll then have 2 lanterns, 2 daggers and 2 thunderstone shards. But you don't want any of those cards in your hand. You want to be able to upgrade your adventurers to rogues or wizards or clerics or whatever the case may be, because they're all stronger in terms of the number of smack that they can lay down to the big bads. But this is where, unlike strength in the old versions, they've also got higher skills.
Yes.
And the skills are what will allow them to equip higher quality weapons. That's also where you might want to have some of the iron ration tokens that are not bread. They just look exactly like bread.
The bread.
Because they will offer you a buff of 2 skill to each particular hero that you spend a bread on.
And look, this is a brilliant addition to the game, because one of the downsides of the original Thunderstone was you would usually spend the first 3 or 4 turns, probably similar to, you find a similar experience sometimes in Marvel Legendary and other deck builders, where your deck just isn't good enough to go and fight someone.
No.
And particularly because often they come out randomly, so you could have some strong ones up front. So you're basically spending the first 3, 4, 5 turns just buying cards, and it's really boring. And it not only lets you do something straight away, but it provides that deck thinning, where often in deck builders, that is where they let the side down because they don't have a readily available deck thinning mechanic. And usually you've got to rely on getting a particular card or a particular combo to do some deck thinning. This, you almost start deck thinning straight away.
Yes, but slightly different than, say, your Marvel Legendary, because in that case, when you've got bad cards in your starting deck, you're still getting battered by the enemies in Marvel Legendary because they just keep coming out and coming out. Whereas this doesn't have quite the same time limit mechanic, so you can slowly build yourself up to and choose when you want to go out fighting, which I think is a nice added bonus.
Exactly right. So the good thing about the wilderness, and I didn't mention it in the village action, is that the wilderness will allow you to upgrade that character basically as the reward for killing a giant rat.
Yeah.
Now, sorry, taking a step back to the village, you can go to the guild's quarters, and that's where instead of leveling up one of your heroes, you can level up 2. It's always going to cost you XP to do that, but you're basically removing either a basic adventurer, which is a 0 card, to a level 1, or a level 1 to a level 2, or a level 2 to a level 3. And level 3 are the highest current adventurers that we're able to get, the current heroes, it must be said.
Yeah.
And they all offer bigger bang for your buck in terms of the strength of them, in terms of their magical abilities, if they're clerics or wizards, and in terms of their skill levels so that they can wield more brutal weapons.
And very importantly, even if you have a whole chest load of XP, you can't go from, say, level 1 straight to level 3. You have to go through the levels in the middle. So you just got to hope that those cards are still there, don't you, Mark?
Yes.
You do, Leon.
Because if they weren't there and you've got a level 1 and for some reason all the level 2s have gone, that just means you're stuck with a bog-standard useless card.
So, Garth, did you mention with those adventurers, what you get is you get the 4... different types you can choose from in the village. They have 8 level 1s.
They do.
4 level 2s.
Yes.
2 level 3s in each sort of set, at least the ones we've seen. And that's exactly the same as the old Thunderstone. And to me, that was always one of the tricks, if you like, is you need to make sure you don't spread yourself too thin, because then you're going to struggle to upgrade. Whereas if you sort of specialise a bit
Leon's
more...
Leon's going to struggle to upgrade.
If you specialise a bit more, you've got a better chance to get through to those higher levels, because they usually are a bit of an exponential curve of power and abilities.
They are. So, you've thinned your deck, you've got your good adventurers that have been upgraded to whatever type of hero you choose to be, and obviously you can have clerics mixed with wizards and dwarves mixed with elves and all of those kinds of things. It's just about getting the right deck synergy.
Mm.
But yeah, when you go across to the dungeon, you've got these three depths. You've got level 1, level 2, level 3. Within each level, there's always going to be two big bads, and they come from a deck for each level. And within those decks are going to be the Guardian Keys. Now, these are essentially the trigger for the end of the game. They are the timing mechanic. There are 6 of them spread out over the 3 decks, so there is 1 of them within deck number 1, as in the bad guys level number 1. There are 2 of them in bad guys level number 2, and there are 3 of them in bad guys level 3. The way the game comes to a conclusion is once the 4th Guardian Key is revealed, that will trigger the end of the round. But fighting monsters is very, very simple. You go down to the appropriate dungeon depth, and you can only ever go as far as you've got enough light to go through, and then you fight the big bad. You'll put all of the cards that you've played down on the table, come up with your total fight. Is it greater than or equal to the current fight of that particular bad guy? Yes. Hey, I kill him. You get the reward. Now, there's rewards on the cards. There's rewards on the dungeon tiles as well, which give it variability.
Nice twist.
And then also, some of the monster cards and some of the dungeon tiles also have special abilities, which means you might want to go and bypass a kobold skirmisher, because I don't care about that, to the next room. But that dungeon tile might have an effect that says, in order for the adventurer to walk through it, you've got to discard a gear token, or you've got to get rid of a weapon, or something else is going to happen. And that just adds that little bit of extra dungeon theme randomness to it, which I like.
Or just a pain.
Or a pain.
Yeah.
That's true. It's depending on your attitude, I guess, really, Leon?
Yeah, true.
Let's talk about that.
Those dungeon tiles, though, do really make the dungeon side of thing a lot more interesting. In the past, as I said, you just had the dungeon deck where you'd have 3 monsters out. This one, you've got 6 to choose from. You've got the various room effects, a lot of variety, a lot of ways to tune your deck up to a particular level or to a particular type of monster.
Exactly right. And then you've also got 2 different types of combat. You've got your physical laying down the smack, and you've got your magical laying down the smack. And that's it. The game's really not that complicated. It just does look imposing when you first put it down on the table and you start drawing deck after deck after deck of cards. You're putting it out on the village board. Mm. You're then giving every person a player aid, because long-term deck build aficionados wouldn't necessarily be used to all that kind of extra guff that goes along with it. Just give me my deck of cards, tell me what I need to buy, and let's just go.
Yes, quite often on your turn, you just like, remember, before you ever turn, you got to move your meeple and just like, it's a deck builder. What are you talking about meeple for God's sake?
Yep.
But then you've got to do it anyway.
Exactly. And I really like that. I think it looks fantastic on the table. It's fun. Well, and the thing is, it also really, really picks up speed very quickly. Because, Leon, you were concerned that this time last week after the show, we weren't going to finish the game, because we played it for about, hour and a half, 2 hours. Mm. Leon said, stuff this, we're not going to finish it. And then within 5 minutes, bang, we'd found the 4th Guardian Key, and we triggered the end of the game.
That's just because you two were taking too long with your turns. That's
that doesn't sound like me. It must have been Mark.
Look, another twist that I really like in this one is the wounds. So I mentioned you used to just get curses, which were deck fillers. So now you get wounds where your hand size is dictated by how many wounds you have. Yeah. So as you get more wounds, your hand size shrinks. So there's incentive to heal your wounds, which you can only do in the village, or to find another way to heal wounds. And the last game we had, where we were playing a more complex game, right towards the end, we all had 3 or 4 wounds. It's 2 wounds per level, by the way. Because we'd been going right down deep into the dungeon.
Yeah, and it's also, thematic as well to the setting, because the more wounded you are, the less going to be equipment and stuff you're going to be able to carry and whatever else, which just makes sense.
Yep,
I agree. So, look, the only thing we haven't really talked about is when the end of the game is triggered, everyone immediately draws six cards. You then get rid of four of them.
Mm.
But then you make sure you're starting your final turn with a hand of eight. You then get to flip over the, in the first scenario, the rat card, and it reveals the guardian, the biggest, baddest of them all, which will have generally the most hit points out there. But on your final turn, a player gets to decide, do I want to just lay down the smack on this big, bad guardian? Because they're going to give you XP equal to half your total attack value. Yeah. So if I attack it for 20, I'm going to get 10 XP. Or is there something better I just want to do? I can just do one more mega turn to finish it off. And the good thing is you're not generally having to do too much analysis on that. You can figure out, is it better for me to do this? Because you've already got your hand in your hand. You can say, well, I'm going to be doing 22 damage. That's fine. I'll get 11 VP. Or is it better if I adventure down to level 3 and attack that big bad because it'll give me a thing that'll allow me to draw a treasure card, which might get me some benefit?
Yeah.
So you can analyse that. And look, as I say, it does wrap up in a crescendo really quite nicely. That's all I've got to say.
I just want to say I think they added a lot. It does make the game bigger, fuller, way more of a table hog, but I really like virtually everything they've done. It's made it really more of a board game and not just a vanilla-y deck builder with a sort of dungeon theme pasted on.
Well, the most important thing, similar to what Clank did the other year, is that there's no other deck builder kind of like this.
Yeah.
Which is the thing, because like I said, we've mentioned it many times, things like your Marvel Legendary and stuff like that. If that's, say, the most well-known one in our hobby these days, you don't want to do something just exactly the same as that. Or obviously Dominion as well. You don't want to do stuff the same as them, because it's just, people are just going to not care, because they've got the legacy now and they've got so many expansions and stuff like that. You've got to do something different, which is where this comes in. Now, before we cut to a break, well, I think we're all going to say that it was really good. It was really good. We really, really liked it. But we've got to nut this out. Thunder scones, right? For some reason, I've got in my head passion fruit icing on top.
Well, there you go. How about I come back next week with a recipe?
Well, fine. We could have done it now, but fine.
I don't know why to make normal scones.
Maybe it's something that Area 52 could sell in their upstairs area where you're there playing games, role-playing, playing some trading cards.
I'm sure they've got some nerd-related cookbooks in there, so I wouldn't be surprised if there are some thunder scones already.
I just want some passion fruit. I don't know why, but a weird craving for passion fruit. I may be pregnant. Anyway.
We'll be back with the news shortly.
Well, there you go. That was Benny Lava, who are from Tassie, with Valentine's Day, which is a bit late because it's, like, that was months ago.
And I did forgot to say a retrospective language warning on that track, I think.
Sure, fair enough. Well, you are with the Dice Men Cometh. It's Edge Radio 99.3 FM. It is time for some
geek news. I'm calling it geek news this week because there's so much crossover.
Well, there you go.
Between all the areas of the things we love. Let me start with this one. So we might hear later about we played The Walking Dead at Leon's birthday.
What?
Leon, not The Walking Dead, sorry.
There you go.
I think of The Walking Dead, Dead of Winter.
There you go.
So, Garth.
Yes.
Who's your favourite Dead of Winter character?
Michonne.
No, we're not The Walking Dead. Oh. Dead of Winter.
It'd be Sparky, wouldn't it?
Sparky, the one.
Yes. You're a big fan of Sparky.
I do not like Sparky at all.
Don't you?
I like him when he was tased.
Garth. Yes,
didn't particularly like him when he stole
my taser.
Everyone
loves Sparky. Because this is a graphic novel. It's described as cross between Air Bud meets The Walking Dead.
Lovely.
It's called Dead of Winter, Good, Good Dog.
Okey-dokey.
It's a graphic novel, and it's the story of Sparky. It's written by Kyle Starks, who's an Eisner Award-nominated writer for his graphic novel Sex Castle. Illustrated by someone called Gabo,
okay,
who did The Life After.
I've read that too.
There you go. In the pantheon of superheroes, none are more lovable and loyal than everyone's favourite good old dog, Sparky. Surviving in the wintry apocalypse, this former TV show stunt dog, termed Zombie Killing Machine, just wants to be friends and be a good boy. And as his fellow survivors scavenge for supplies, will Sparky be able to protect his companions from threats, both undead and otherwise?
I'm going
to
say yes.
Collect issues 1 to 4 from the Good, Good Dog storyline from Dead of Winter. So we've got Dead of Winter graphic novels. How about that?
That is cool, actually.
You want some more crossover?
I do, yes.
What are two of the hottest properties in geeks right now?
Rick and Morty.
Yes.
And...
Game of Thrones.
Close. D&D.
D&D.
So we've also got another graphic novel crossover miniseries launching, written by Patrick Rothfuss, famous fantasy... what does he do? Writes books, fantasy novelist, and a guy called Jim Zub, who's also been writing D&D comics. And in the story, Morty will seek help from Rick in learning D&D, because that's what all the cool kids are playing. Mm. And as a result, Rick, Morty, and the Smith family find themselves on an epic quest. Ooh. There'll be four issues, and they'll have variant covers, which include... character sheets.
Ah.
There you go.
The Rick and Morty comics are actually quite good.
Yeah?
I have read some of them. And also, before, I forgot to... I was looking up a second ago, but the name of it. There is also already a dog-based zombie apocalypse graphic novel called Rover Red Charlie.
Ah.
That's written by Garth Ennis, who's the guy who did Preacher.
Oh, wow, yes.
And it's real good.
Oh, there you go. And look, in one more little bit of comics crossed over with television news... Why the Last Man is back on. They've greenlit the pilot again.
Ooh.
That is one of my all-time favourite graphic novels, that series, Why the Last Man by Brian K. Vaughan.
It is my favourite.
I can't wait to see it as a TV series.
I got to a certain point and then I stopped.
Oh, really? No, you got to go to the end, Garth.
I don't know how far to the... like I've got to go.
Just in read more, it from the start again.
In more TV news, it has been revealed that Amazon could spend over $1 billion on its on its Lord of the Rings television show.
Okay.
So they're talking about 5 seasons. They've got Peter Jackson on board as an executive producer. It's likely to begin production within 2 years. They had initially got $250 million for the first 2 seasons, plus they paid $250 million for the rights.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. That's
but now crazy. It looks like all up, it's going to be over $1 billion.
Well, isn't Jeff Bezos the richest man in the world? Like,
oh, the Amazon owner, yeah, so, and he also owns the Washington
Post. Yeah, and I mean, who cares? It's like he's just put it on his Visa card.
Kind of for a laugh, wouldn't it be great if the show was rubbish? And they've gone, well, we've paid $1 billion and we've said 5 seasons.
Yep. 4 seasons are just going to be walking, you know, walking thingamabobs in the forest, aren't they? Little halflings going from place to place?
I don't know. And look, my last crossover piece of news. Leon, you're going to love this one.
Okay.
You're sitting down, Leon.
I guess it's called Z2 Comics because it's in America, are releasing Apocrypha, The Legend of Baby Metal.
Uh-huh.
It's a graphic novel detailing the origin of the Kawaii Metal Dance Unit, which... Kawaii Metal, also known as like Japan Pop Metal,
yeah.
Baby Metal being the, I don't know if they're the inventors, but they're the first big name
They're
band.
The most famous ones.
Although other acts have included Lady Baby, Deadlift Lolita, and Doll's Box. So
all sound grand.
A graphic novel about the creation of Baby Metal.
Baby Metal are awesome.
When I saw that, what is it? I Want Chocolate Song first came out, it blew me away.
So it's quite funny because the people that are actually in the band that those guys tour with are like the best metal musicians in all of Japan.
Yeah, I know. That's awesome. With 3 little, like, 10-year-olds.
Yeah.
Look, one super quick one, because I'm probably going to talk about it next week or the week after in Kickstarter, but there's a Terminator game on Kickstarter.
There is.
Not from our friends Rule and Make.
Mm.
Terminator Genesis, Rise of the Resistance.
And so, I think we can all agree Terminator Genesis is the best movie in the franchise. Is that right, Leon?
I haven't even seen it.
Anyway, look.
Is that the one with Khaleesi in it?
Yes. And although it looks to be much more a minis game, whereas the one from Rule and Make was... much more more Euro-style
dice
game.
Manipulation.
Yeah. Speaking of minis games, Batham City, goodness me.
God.
Batman Gotham City Chronicles.
I have heard of it.
Entered the top 10 Kickstarter games. That's a list I've talked about before. At number 6, because it did make $4.4 million.
Yeah, it was just from Leon.
Just from a little old game.
From 5 backers.
Gloomhaven is about to drop off the list because it's slightly under 4 million.
Well, no wonder Isaac is releasing an expansion. Did I give you some news?
No, that's in here later,
Gary. Okay, sorry.
But also, another game that's in the top 10 at number 4, Dark Souls, which none of us have really got into, but is huge out there. Oops. It raised 5.5 million.
Yeah.
They've just announced not one, not two, not three, not four, not five,
seven,
but six expansions being released between now and October.
Wowza.
Can you believe it?
So all of them are just how you die in different ways. Is that right?
So you've got
it's one a month.
Couple of, well, it's like two every 2 months, that's more math. Likely. So they've got a couple that are introducing a whole bunch of different things, like one of those sort of little mini expansions.
Yeah.
Then they've got a couple of big boss type expansions, which, of course, another big boss mini.
Well, I'm pretty sure the actual expansions for the Kickstarter version of that, I don't actually know if they've been shipped to people yet anyway, so that's probably what they're talking about.
No, these are new.
Yeah, fair enough.
These are new, as far as I'm aware. And, yeah, so few of them are big boss expansions. A few of them just add a heap of extra stuff. Speaking of a game that has so many expansions, Sentinels of the Multiverse bringing out, they have said, their final expansion.
I thought they'd already done that.
It's coming out in June. Mm. It's called Oblivion, spelt funny.
Right.
Where the superheroes of Earth and beyond have fought and prevailed against an unknown cosmic power time and again. However, this is not the only timeline.
Dun, 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 dun,
dun, dun, dun. So, timey-wimey stuff, five new heroes, a mission deck with quests for the heroes,
yep.
Few more villain decks, two more environment decks, and a comic book.
I would like to see them do the Sentinels of the Multiverse, just ultimate, that has everything in it.
Yeah.
I mean, it'd be stupid expensive.
It's one of those games I'll still happily sit down and play it, but I think maybe it just needs a bit of tightening up. Mm. Like, it just, I don't know, it feels its age a little bit.
The
now.
App certainly helps where instead of all those little cardboard chits to count all the
everything.
Plus ones and minus ones, you can do it on an app. That was really handy. German publisher Queen Games has two new games coming out. Now, one of these has sort of already come out because it actually was kickstarted. Surprise, surprise, from Queen Games. But that's Luxor.
Yep.
But it's not released to retail yet. And then the second one is Kobold, which is more a kiddie type game because it has a three-dimensional setup which creates a boy's bedroom.
Mm.
And he has precious toys on the floor. But there are kobolds coming to steal his preciouses. And the boy has a torch. And it's a little bit dissimilar, but not completely, to the sun moving around in photosynthesis.
Yeah, okay.
The boy moves around with his torch. Now, the boy is the game. The kobolds are the players. So you're hiding in shadows trying to steal the precious little
toys. That could almost just be Monsters, Inc. the game.
Yeah.
And if that's exactly what Monsters, Inc. do. They go through the door and they have to stay away from the kid and they go, rah!
And it could be. If it's anything like previous Queen games, it'll probably cost $20 and the shipping will be $779,000.
Correct.
Well, it's designed by the duo Marco Ruskowski and Marcel Susselbeck, who did Fresco.
Yeah, okay.
The other Queen game is by Rudiger Dorn. It's Luxor. We may have mentioned it briefly on a Kickstarter update. It's a very Euro-y game set in a pharaoh's tomb.
Yeah, the problem,
going out,
problem
stuff
for out. Queen Games in Australia is the shipping. It's just absolutely redonkulous. So unless you're getting the game in a shop or buying it secondhand from some poor fool who paid the $50 shipping for a $25 game, they just don't come to Australia that much.
Susselbeck.
Yeah.
Sorry, I just wanted to say that after you said it. It looks so fun.
Garth, a game that featured for both you and I in our early years of gaming, and because it's tied to a particularly individual, a new edition of Steve Jackson's game classic Illuminati.
Ooh.
Is going to be released in September with new art, more current up-to-date references and events.
Is it Munchkin Illuminati, the TCC
it's
version?
It's very similar to the original version. Okay. Of course, we both met Trent, or you met him because he married his sister, his wife's sister-in-law, whatever. I met him playing Illuminati, yes. So there you go. Now, another game coming out again, the 2000 Spiel des Jahres recommended list, Taj Mahal.
Yep.
It's going to be re-released by Z-Man Games, which is it's set at the height of the Mughal Empire. Now, is it just me, or is there a whole heap of like Indian theme games?
There is a lot of Indian
Raja of the Gandhis and some other ones.
This one.
Yeah. Anyway, look, it was a big hit back in 2000 when it came out. It's going to be coming out again soon. Games Workshop, they do a lot of Warhammer things. They are releasing...
I should hope so. They own it.
That's right. But they are releasing The Lord of the Rings Quest to Mount Doom, which is a new board game in the Lord of the Rings universe where you're cooperatively trying to find the One Ring and then take it to Mount Doom and destroy it, where the board game plays Sauron and the bad guys. Now, that sounds very similar to the Reiner Knizia game of the same name. When I look at it on the board, it looks a bit talisman-y like, except you're not going around in a squiggle.
Around and around.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. There's nothing on Board Game Geek about this one yet, so I'll be interested to see what happens.
Hmm.
Now, have you guys heard about board games being stolen?
Yes.
In Malaysia.
I have, actually,
yeah,
Mark.
Yeah, you posted this, Garth, and I went, yeah, that's some news.
All right.
Better talk about it.
You should better talk about that.
But there's a group in Singapore and Malaysia called Borders Tabletop Game Studio that was doing large group pledges for big Kickstarters, trying to combine shipping, get it all together, help local people save money. And look, some individuals had pledged as much as $2,000 worth of games to this group. Now, all of a sudden, alarm bells started ringing because when shipping notices were coming out from the original company saying this game's are shipping now, these games are shipping now, all these people in Singapore and Malaysia were thinking, I haven't heard anything yet about that game.
Yeah, because it must be said that they weren't officially, Borders weren't officially anything to do with these Kickstarters. They weren't, you know, through the campaign's official group buy companies. It was just they put up a thing on their Facebook page saying, hey, we're in Malaysia. Any Southeast Asians want to group buy through us so that we'll reduce your shipping.
And they're actually a tabletop cafe.
Yeah.
Right.
So now there's been a loss of communication, a lack of communication for a lot of these games. Now they've included Role Player, Brass, Moa, Food Chain Magnate, Lords of Hellas, Cthulhu Wars, and a whole bunch of other ones. Mm. But, of course, all the publishers are saying, well, hang on, it's not really our fault because they're not an actual representative of ours. Apparently the police are now involved.
Yeah, well, as far as the Kickstarter creators and publishers are concerned, they're just a customer. So they have actually, you know, either not paid Kickstarter properly, they've just collected funds and not done anything, so it's really looking bad. They're talking about it being one of the largest cases of theft/fraud in the tabletop hobby.
Yeah, it's quite scary.
So it's big news.
We'll keep an eye on that one. Now, you did mention before, Garth, Cephalofair Games.
Cephalofair.
Bringing out the first expansion to Gloomhaven called Gloomhaven Forgotten Circles, and it's planned for release at Essen.
Because, look, it's only got 1,000 hours of gameplay, so it probably needs an expansion.
That's the problem with Gloomhaven. There's just not enough stuff.
Yeah.
And it just doesn't take long enough.
Now, this is designed by Marcel Kvetchakska, who worked with Isaac Childress on quite a few of the scenarios towards the high end, I think. Now, a lot of people are like, oh, great, I can do some different stuff and not have to go all the way to the end, except this expansion continues on after you've finished the original Gloomhaven campaign. So you've got to get through that first, but it introduces a new character class, a new scenario book, seven new monsters. You need new monsters and 14 new items, although it's only being talked about $30 or so. So it's not overly expensive, but if you've got Gloomhaven, you better start getting into it now.
Yeah, I might buy this in 20 years' time.
Yeah.
Actually, what I might do is I'll swap you my Gloomhaven copy, Leon, for your Batman.
Because
we
both
probably will have finished playing them by then.
Not in the slightest. Although I would like to hear from any of our listeners if they or anybody they know has finished Gloomhaven.
Ooh.
Or even come close, for the love of God.
And lucky last bit of news, have either of you heard of Italian company Ares Games?
Yes.
What do they make?
Games.
Garth, do you know?
Nah.
Wings of Glory, Sails of Glory, all those little glory Miniature games. So they started off with the World War One miniature plane game, then the World War Two miniature war game. They've sort of been backwards and forwards and brought out new bits and pieces. Well, now they have the license to Battlestar Galactica, the old classic series, and the reimagined series, and they're bringing out Battlestar Galactica Starship Battles
of Glory
with no glory in there. Apart from if you beat win in battle. And so, of course, it's going to feature pre-painted and assembled miniatures with a special base to support the unique game mechanics because you track a lot of stuff on the base. Sort of like X-Wing, I guess.
X-Wing's unique. Sort of exactly like this other game that's huge.
Well, but these guys were the first to actually invent this genre.
I don't know. I think Star Wars was a long, long time ago.
No.
In a galaxy far.
Yeah, okay. So you can be Colonials or you can be Cylons. You'll face off in dogfights and all other kind of missions. We will hear more about this in Gen Con 2018.
Cool.
That's all the news that I've got.
Oh, thank you very much, Mark. That was very newsworthy indeed. We better throw to a song before Leon gets to tell us about his little party that he had on Saturday.
Party!
Where are the Dice Men cometh?
Thanks, Edge Radio and Area 52.
Here's a song.
In the days when Babylon was the greatest city on earth, mankind lived in placid ignorance of the grandeur, vastness and horror of the cosmos.
Oh man, I cannot do that voice. Following cataclysmic events on earth, the fragile veil between reality and the void was shattered and the truth of existence revealed. As mankind cried for salvation, they were torn from their homeworld by void torrents and the surviving peoples of earth were scattered amongst the stars. Countless were lost, and mankind seemed all but perished. Over the decades, the survivors, stragglers, and ragged remnants of mankind's tribes struggled for their lives across countless uncaring worlds. However, a few managed to go beyond a mere subsistence and travel the void currents to congregate in fabled Lynn, epicenter of the cosmos. Does that sound interesting to you, Mark?
Oh, Garth, yeah! This is the Black Void role-playing game where you play the descendant of the survivors from Earth when mankind has been thrust into an outlandish subsistence at the bottom of the hierarchy in the dystopian cosmopolitan Lynn the Eternal, a place of wonder, intrigue and decadence, swarming with outlandish life forms, eccentric demons and fickle demigods. You and your fellow players are among the scarce human survivors struggling in filthy alleys and shanties among beggars, slaves, and the casteless, and it's up to you whether humanity will rise to greatness or be trampled underfoot. This is a dark and not erotic, but exotic fantasy setting where characters explore mysterious new worlds. It's not one of these good versus evil type of games. In fact, the game takes a less rigid approach and probes grey areas. Ooh!
Well, there you go. But like in life, surely all those decisions are really hard and really complicated to make, aren't they?
Yeah!
You can be a descendant of the survivors of Earth. You can choose to be emissaries defending the enclaves. You can travel the void currents as explorers. You can venture to find Earth, which is the long-lost cradle of humanity. You can seek influence and try to claim a new home for mankind. Or you can go to the underlying intrigues of Lynn and build an empire in the dark. It's exactly what happens at the Dice Men Cometh.
So, Garth, did you know in the eternal city of Lynn, everything is about whom you know? Being well-connected goes beyond your caste and social status. Now, in the game terms, this is called Wasta. I'm sure that's how it's pronounced. Wasta. Or it's also known as clout. You can't purchase Wasta. And mostly you're going to begin play with no Wasta. But did you know Wasta? It's an Arabic word which loosely translates into clout. It also means nepotism.
Interesting.
So, Garth, I'm going to use a bit of my Wasta right now to tell you a little bit about this game, because I think this is an RPG our listeners should definitely check out You don't get bogged down in rules or character creation. There's a lot of freedom for characters. It has a lot of Middle Eastern influence. And Christopher, who has put this together, although he hails from Denmark, there's a Tasmanian connection with our Princess Mary, but he spent a lot of time recently in the Middle East, and there's a lot of Middle Eastern flavour here, which makes it really exotic. The weapons and the different types of choices around careers and things are really interesting as well. I think this is well worth a look, this one, Garth.
So yes, Black Void RPG by Christopher Sevildsson. It's on Kickstarter now. It's had a cracker of a start, and it's already 50% funded. If this sounds like your kind of RPG, please jump onto Kickstarter. Go take a look at Black Void. The prices are really good for the PDF and the hard copy books. There are lots of really amazing pieces of art, as well as a great story and a simple D12 style of RPG. Go take a look. It's on Kickstarter. We are over and out.
Who's coming out of this?
What?
Who's coming out of this?
Who's
hey,
coming out?
Hey, what? What? Live radio.
Edit point.
What is that?
All right, guys. That was ZK Superstar.
Really?
Mm.
Well, it was the song by Zvenda Klass, or Classy, or Class A.
Yeah, it was super classy.
Yep.
Anywho, he is, or they is, or she was, a Tassie act.
Ooh.
You are with the Dice Men Cometh. It is Ed Radio 99.3 FM. And Leon.
Hello.
Who is now dyeing his hair.
Yeah.
Complaining of a sore back.
Yep.
And probably going to bed early.
Yep.
31 years old, Leon.
The midlife crisis has kicked in 20 years early, lads.
Ah, yeah.
Next I'm going to buy a Ferrari and yeah. And I was about to say, and date a woman half my age, but that'd be illegal. So I'm not going to do that. Hello, sweetheart. Love you.
Anyway. Okay,
that was my wife I was talking to, by the way.
Now, we're not going to talk about your actual birthday, which is Sunday, because we don't care what you did on that particular day.
No, you just weren't there anyway.
No, let's talk about the Saturday, which was a day full of fun and
yes.
frivolity and joy and happiness and all of those other things.
Yes.
And then you were there too.
Indeed I was. So we went to our local pub and we had all the drinks and all the games and it was much, much fun. So I'm going to do this in backwards order. I'm going to talk about the end of the night first.
Okay.
So we
can you remember it?
I can, even though I had a drink or 17 is the actual number at the end. Yeah, so they ended up being about 20 or so people during the day, but in the wee hours of the late night, there ended up being 8 of us.
Ah, nice.
And the us 8 for the last probably 3 hours or so, what we played was Deception.
Yep.
Murder in Hong Kong,
nice.
Which is 8. Is a spot-on number for that game. Anything less than that as well, for about 5, 6, 7, 8, that's the sweet spot for that game. Anything more, and because you've got to look at all different cards on the table, which gets a bit too much. But that game is just absolute gold.
And did you play the base or the expansion?
We played, there was a mix.
Okay, cool.
We played the base and the new expansion, which just adds more stuff, which is, as I've always said, that's what you want from a first expansion. We also played Usual Suspects, which is a game I absolutely love, but if there is a dictionary definition of needs to play with the right group, because this whole game is about horrible stereotypes about human beings.
Okay.
But if you play with the right group, ooh, the hilarity. And another game that we've mentioned before on the show that is just, it's absolutely brilliant, and luckily is readily available in like normal toy stores and stuff these days, is Telestrations.
Oh, yeah.
We've talked about it before. You can get it in a pack where you can play it up to 8 players, but there's a party pack version where you can play it up to 12 players. That's the one you want.
Yeah.
It's one of those games that, why is this? I mean, something like Pictionary's famous and Scattergories is famous, and they're not bad games at all, but Telestrations should be a household name when it comes to the board game, as far as I'm concerned, because this game is, it's for me, I would say, an absolute must-own in the hobby for anybody. It is the ultimate party game.
It is
game.
So much fun.
Yeah. Yep.
It is the way that almost every convention night ends as well, with a table of, how many does this play if you get the big versions of it?
12, but there's nothing stopping you from putting several versions together.
So you will find in various rooms in a convention a circle full of people, all with their little flipboard and their black marker pen, just pissing themselves with laughter. And what a great way to end every single night.
But the thing is, this game, you can play this with a group of 6-year-olds and have an absolute ball. You can play this with a drunken group of 30-year-olds and have an absolute ball, which is what we did. But the thing I just wanted to quickly mention was that the first game we played of the day
which was an 11-player game of Dead of Winter Warring Colonies.
Oh, yeah.
So the most you can possibly play with that game, one colony versus the other, and one of us, me, because I was the birth of the boy, was the lone wolf who was out for himself.
Yes.
And you lads were on opposite teams?
We were, which was awesome.
And Garth, you tasered a dog?
I did taser Sparky.
Yeah.
But I wasn't really tasering Sparky because I hate the dog.
Yeah.
It was just that Bo, who owned the dog, he was being mean to me and he encroached on my territory.
And then he stole the taser.
And then he stole the taser and then I retreated from the fight and then I rolled the exposure. Died and then I died.
Yes, and Mark
I died, Leon.
Yes, your team won mainly because the other team wiped themselves
out.
We
went from four morale to zero morale because I died on the way to the colony, which meant then my death spread between all the other colonists, and then they had the nerve to die instead of taking one for the team to cease this damn spread of death.
So anyway, we're probably not going to do an complete full review on this. So just our thoughts on it: 11 players. It's too much.
It's too many.
It's way too many. Yeah. The lone wolf player, which I played, you get these mission cards, which is what you're trying to do to win the game. If your mission cards say things that, like, on your turn, you have to such and such and whatever else, it means you don't really have to pay attention to what anybody else is doing.
Yeah.
So I played my turn, which is always at the start. The lone wolf goes first. And then I kind of mingled for 20 minutes
while
you guys did all your turns, because my missions had nothing to do with you guys whatsoever.
And you didn't fight with us, you didn't do any of this stuff.
And even though we were both colonies effectively taking turns at the same time, it's still, look, it didn't take forever, but the downtime for the lone wolf in particular was huge.
Yep.
But even the downtime for the rest of us was quite a bit, because there's just too much going on. There's so many standees on the board. You know, you don't really know who's in. There's no way to differentiate between who's on what team because they're just all pictures of people.
You just need two different colours of standees, the bases, and that would have made so much life easier.
And you need two versions of the game to play this, so it's a lot of stuff. So the setup took quite a while. Yeah. And trust me, the next day when I just said to everyone, I'll just chuck it all in the box, I'll sort it out the next day. Oh, that took some time as well.
I bet it did. I bet it did.
But if you're a Dead of Winter nut like we are, it's definitely worth at least having a crack off. Maybe four versus four. And if everyone is really into Dead of Winter or has played it recently especially, so you've still got the rules in your head.
And again, maybe at a convention, because then you know, you've got the spectacle of a massive table and hundreds of sort of standees and everything. But yeah, anything else, Leon, very quickly?
We also played When I Dream, which is amazing, and Tortuga, which we will probably do a review of at some point.
Okay, it looks beautiful.
We only played it quickly, but it was good, and I want to play it a little bit more.
Cool. Well, that's been episode 208. We have been the Dice Men Cometh. We are thanking Area 52 because we have to and we want to. We're all going to be back next week. Thank you very much for listening. Thank you, Edge Radio, for having us. And we are out of here.
Thank you very much. Bye.
Toodle-pip.
You've been listening to another episode of The Dice Men Cometh. Thanks to Area 52, Hobart's best ventilated game store, and more. Find out more on area52.com.au. They support the Dice Men, and you can too, at Patreon for as little as just $1 per month. It's not a lot to ask for podcasting gold.